Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Good morning, everyone, and I would like to welcome you to the Sharon Hunter Bay Morning Show. We have a great topic lined up for you this morning, and I'm looking forward to hearing everybody's thoughts and opinions on this particular topic. The topic for today's show is going to be the prison industry in the United States, big business or a new form of slavery. Well, I tend to think it's both. And I think a lot of clips that I'm going to show you and a lot of evidence that I'm going to bring to you today is going to show you that both of those are indeed true. Okay? Again, I'd like everyone out there to keep in mind that if you have a question or a comment, the dial-in number for the show is 310-982-4184. Again, that's 310-982-4184. Just call that number, press 1 to raise your hand, and then I'll open up your mic and let you in for you, so you can have your say. Okay? All right. Well, let's start the show off by giving you a little background information that we're doing today. I came across this article written by somebody named Vicky Pelez, and in this article she writes that human rights organizations, as well as political and social ones, are condemning what they are calling a new form of inhumane exploitation in the United States, where they say a prison population of up to 2 million, mostly black and Hispanic, are working for various industries for a pittance. For the tycoons who have invested in the prison industry, it has been like finding a pot of gold. They don't have to worry about the strikes or paying unemployment insurance, vacations, or comp time. All their workers are full-time, and they never arrive late or at least absent because of family problems. And moreover, if they don't like the pay of 25 cents an hour and refuse to work, they're locked up in isolation cells. There are approximately 2 million inmates in the state, federal, and private prisons throughout the country. According to California Prison Focus, no other society in human history has imprisoned so many of its own citizens. The figures show that the United States has locked up more people than any other country, a half a million more than China, which has the population 5 times greater than the United States. Statistics reveal that the United States holds 25% of the world's prison population, but only 5% of the world's people. From less than 300,000 inmates in 1972, the jail population grew to 2 million by the year 2000. In 1990, it was 1 million. 10 years ago, there were only 5 private prisons in the country with a population of 2,000 inmates. Now there are 100 with 62,000 inmates. It is expected that by the coming decade, the number will hit 360,000, according to reports. So what has happened over the last 10 years? Why are there so many prisoners? The private contracting of prisoners for work fosters incentives to lock people up. Prisons depend on this income. Corporate stockholders who make money off of prisoners work lobby for longer sentences in order to expand their workforce. The system feeds itself, says one study by the Progressive Labor Party, which accuses the prison industry of being an imitation of the Nazi Germany with respect to forced slave labor and concentration camps. The prison industry complex is one of the fastest growing industries in the United States, and its investors are on the Wall Street. This multi-million dollar industry has its own trade exhibitions, conventions, websites, and mail order internet catalogs. It also has direct advertising campaigns, architecture companies, construction companies, investment houses on Wall Street, plumbing and supply companies, food supply companies, armed security, and padded cells in a large variety of colors. According to the Left Business Observer, the federal prison industry produces 100% of all military helmets, ammunition belts, bulletproof vests, ID tags, shirts, pants, tents, bags, and canteens. Along with war supplies, prison workers supply 98% of the entire market for equipment assembly services. 92% of stove assembly, 46% of body armor, 36% of home appliances, 30% of headphone microphone speakers, and 21% of office furniture, airplane parts, medical supplies, and much more. Prisoners are even raising seeing eye dogs for blind people. According to the reports by human rights organizations, these are the factors that increase the profit potential for those who invest in the prison industry complex. Jailing persons convicted of nonviolent crimes and long prison sentences for possession of microscopic quantities of illegal drugs. Federal law stipulates five years imprisonment without possibility of parole for possession of 5 grams of crack or 3.5 ounces of heroin, and 10 years for possession of less than 2 ounces of rock, cocaine, or crack. A sentence of 5 years for cocaine powder requires possession of 500 grams, 100 times more the quantity of a rock cocaine for the same sentence. Most of those who use cocaine powder are white, middle class, or rich people, while mostly blacks and Latinos use rock cocaine. In Texas, a person may be sentenced for up to 2 years imprisonment for possessing 4 ounces of marijuana. Here in New York, the 1973 Nelson Rockefeller anti-drug law provides for a mandatory prison sentence of 15 years to life for possession of 4 ounces of any illegal drug. The passage in 13 states of the three strikes law, life in prison after being convicted of three felonies, made it necessary to build 20 new federal prisons. One of the most disturbing cases resulting from this measure was that of a prisoner who for stealing a car and two bicycles received 3 25-year sentences. Longer sentences, the passages of laws that require minimum sentencing without regards of circumstances, and a large expansion of work prisoners creating profits that motivate the incarceration of more people for longer periods of time. More punishment of prisoners so as to lengthen their sentences. Prison labor law has its roots in slavery. after the 1965 Civil War, a system of hiring out prisoners was introduced in order to continue the slavery tradition. Free slaves were charged with not carrying out their sharecropping commitments, cultivating someone else's land in exchange for part of the harvest, or petty thievery, which were almost never proven, and were then hired out for cotton picking, working in mines, and building railroads. From 1870 to 1910, in the state of Georgia, 88% of hired out convicts were black. In Alabama, 93% of hired out miners were black. In Mississippi, a huge prison farm similar to the old slave plantation replaced the system of hiring out convicts. During the post-Civil War period, Jim Crow racial segregation laws were imposed on every state, with legal segregation in schools, housing, marriages, and many other aspects of daily life. Today, a new set of markedly racist laws is imposing slave labor and sweatshops on the criminal justice system, now known as the prison industry complex. Who is investing? At least 37 states have legalized the contracting of prison labor by private corporations that mount their operations inside state prisons. The list of such companies contain the cream of the U.S. corporate society: IBM, Boeing, Motorola, Microsoft, AT&T Wireless, Texas Instruments, Dell, Compaq, Honeywell, Hewlett-Packard, Nortel, Lucent Technologies, 3Com, Intel Northern Telecom, TWA, Nordstrom, Revlon, Macy's, Pierre Cardin, Target Stores, and many more. All of these businesses are excited about the economic boom generated by prison labor. Just between 1980 and 1994, profits went up from $392 million to $1.31 billion. Inmates in state penitentiaries generally received a minimum wage for their work, but not all. Colorado, they get about $2 per hour, well under the minimum. And in privately run prisons, they receive as little as 17 cents per hour for a maximum of 6 hours a day, the equivalent of $20 a month. The highest paid private prison is CCA in Tennessee, where prisoners receive 50 cents per hour for what they call highly skilled positions. At those rates, it is no surprise that inmates find the pay in federal prisons to be very generous. There, they can earn $1.25 an hour and work 8 hours a day, and sometimes overtime. They can send home from $200 to $300 per month. Thanks to prison labor, the United States is once again an attractive location for investment in work that was designed for third world labor markets. A company that operates a business closed down its operations and relocated to San Quentin State Prison in California. In Texas, a factory fired its 150 workers and contracted services prisoner workers for private Lockhart, Texas prison, where circuit boards are assembled for companies like IBM and Compaq. The prison privatization boom began in the 1980s under the governments of Ronald Reagan and Bush Sr., but reached its height in 1990 under William Clinton, which when Wall Street stocks were selling like hotcakes. Clinton's programs for cutting the federal workforce resulted in the Justice Department's contracting of private prison corporations for the incarceration of undocumented workers and high-security inmates. Private prisons are the biggest business in the prison industry complex. About 18 corporations guard 10,000 prisoners in 27 states. The two largest are Correctional Corporation of America, which is CCA, and Wackenhut, which together control 75%. Private prisoners receive a guaranteed amount of money for each prisoner, dependent on what it costs to maintain each one. According to Russell Boras, a private prison administrator in Virginia, the secret to low operating costs is having a minimum number of guards for the maximum number of prisoners. The CCA has an ultra-modern prison in Lawrenceville, Virginia, where five guards on day shifts and two at night watch over 750 prisoners. In these prisons, inmates may get their sentence reduced for good behavior, but any infraction, they get 30 days added, which means more profit for CCA. According to a study of New Mexico prisons, it was found that CCA inmates lost good behavior time at a rate 8 times higher than those in state prisons. Okay, so that was a little background information there on it. I want to know if anybody out there listening, if, what's your opinion on that little information that I just read off to you about the prison system? Is it shocking to anyone of African descent? I think not. I think the shocking must be on their part because it's not on ours. I think it's something that we have known for quite a long time. We have known that the justice system, there's no justice for us in it, but we've known it for a long time. All right, I'm going to bring in a caller. Area code 904, you're on the mic.
Hey, Sister Sharon. I was listening to the statistics that you're running off, and I think that a lot of us need to understand that this thing is real, and these people in their plans are to incarcerate every male of African descent, either incarcerate them or kill them. And these two things are going on throughout the entire United States. If you look at the incidents up in St. Louis where they kill a young man, and now they got the media, which feeds off of this stuff because that brings in the more people listening to their television broadcast about the situation. We're doing an autopsy, and we're doing this, and then we go in and show an incident where the guy that was killed, he supposedly committed a crime, and the media broadcast this over and over and over, which will give the policeman that killed him probable cause to shoot him, which it didn't have anything to do with the reason why he shot him. But what I want to say is I brought that up to make us aware of the fact that we are at war, and however, we are not acting like it, and we're not preparing. We have not looked at the nature of the people who we are at war with and their record, and that has not told us what to do immediately, even upon seeing one, what to do. So this is something that we're going to have to pay attention to. This industrial prison complex, this thing is replaced the farm industry inside the United States. It's all big business, and it's all about slavery. The United States of America has never been without its slaves, and we have to understand that. And but the key to stemming the tide on this thing is to pay attention and look at the history of people that have actually done different things inside the United States. There are solutions that are available, but we just have to pay attention. That's my input on that you read.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Brother Tahaka. Now, the main question was of the topic today. What do you think about that? Is the prison industry big business, or is it a new form of slavery, or is it both?
It's actually both. It is extremely big business, and it covers the entire United States. We have to realize that we are only getting a fraction of what's going on inside the prison industrial complex. And in order for us to survive this thing, because we cannot depend on anybody to save us, we have to save ourselves. It is a multi-billion-dollar industry. It is fueling all of the stores and stuff where we are spending our money at and all of this stuff. All of this is going on. You're absolutely correct. It's both.
I think I had mentioned that there was somewhere in Texas where a company fired 150 of their workers, and they had contracted all of their labor out to the prison industry where they would be able to pay them. Instead of paying those 150 workers the amount that they were paying them, they're going to get the prison workers and contract them and pay them, what, 17 cents, 50 cents a day. And that's where the slave labor comes in at.
Well, yeah, exactly. It's a business. And they're treating it as a business. And you got a lot of companies that have left the United States. And there will be a time when these same companies that have left the United States are also going to be reinvesting in the United States through slave labor. This is the same identical thing that what we have in the United States is identical to what Hitler had in Germany with the concentration camp. This is identical. There is nothing different. You have people, you have armed guards, you have military outfits, military weapons, all of this stuff going on, and this scares a lot of people.
Exactly. Well, I've got another caller with the hand raised up. I'm going to bring them on, please. Okay. Area code 404, you're on the mic.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great.
Morning.
Mag, who am I speaking with?
Yes, this is Roslyn from the Power Forgiveness Show. Great show, great topic. I'm going to speak from my own point of view, having three brothers, but thank God one just came home a couple months ago in the prison system, because it is a form of slavery, because, number one, nobody really ain't saying much. They're giving our men and women more time than they're supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
And in the prison system, everything costs more than out here. Like a bag of potato chips out here costs you maybe 50 cents, and there's a dollar or more. And it's another form of slavery, and it's sad that they're getting away with it, and they will take advantage of they have been doing it, but it seems like nobody cares about it. And I don't wish it on nobody. You know, it's good to pray for your loved ones. Everybody.
Okay, looks like the caller dropped. She'll probably call back in, and we'll let her back in. But I must agree with what the sister had to say. Is definitely slave labor. Now, I wasn't aware that the commissaries or the purchase stuff was more expensive in prison than it is out here. But doing my research, I found out that this little boy, his dad was in prison, and he wanted to call his dad in prison, but they said that he couldn't call him very often because they charged $17 a minute to speak to his father in prison. $17 a minute. I'm going, wow. How in the world can they get away with this kind of stuff? They've been getting away with it, and I guess they will continue to get away with it. Until when, Brother Tahaka?
Well, the thing is, we're going to have to study our story. We're going to have to embrace and look up everything that we can find about Nat Turner. We're going to have to look at actually pay close attention to and study what happened with the D.C. sniper and the other brother out in California who was a police officer, a brother that was being victimized through racism and stuff. And we're going to have to do some things a little bit differently. And I keep trying to make people aware of the fact that we are in a war and we have an enemy. And this is an old enemy. He's not new. We got to stop talking about all the nuts and bolts and wiggle pins of what's happening. And we need to talk about it. And we need media coverage and protesting. And all of this is a waste of time. You got to get to the immediate solution. You got to, and there's a whole ton of stuff available to you. You have to learn how to live in the woods. You got to learn how to hunt. You got to learn how to fire a high-powered rifle in order to put the food on the table. And there are daytime scopes available for these rifles, and there are nighttime scopes available for these rifles where you can hunt at night. And when you use these night scopes, they give you the they gather light from the moon, and it appears when you're looking through these scopes that it's daylight. You cannot miss an animal when you're trying to feed your family. So we're gonna have
I've never had the opportunity to fire one of those weapons off with a night scope and stuff.
Well, they make night scope equipment. You have binoculars, night vision binoculars. You have night vision scopes for high-powered rifles. And these are the things that we need to get familiar with so that we can learn how to hunt, how to fish and trap. And when we develop these skills, we replace any fear that we have with these skills. And we study the works of Nat Turner. We study hunting and fishing and trapping books and magazines and stuff and learn how to prepare yourselves for survival, because we are in a war and we're going to have skill. We got to begin to operate in silence and stop all the protesting. And as soon as something happens, there should be very few questions ask, you know, who done it? And just, you know, there's quiet after that. And so when we learn how to think this way and act this way, then you will discover that things will change. I try to imagine what would have happened in Washington if we had at least 10 D.C. snipers. I mean, you know, it's you know, hunting and fishing and trapping is very important. And we're going to have to learn these skills.
I must agree. Because it seems like to me, this is just my opinion, but it just seems like that's, that violence are, and weapons and things of that nature seems to be the only type of language that they really know and respect. So it seems like to me that the solution is that we're going to have to take a more active role in their way of handling things instead of our traditional ways of handling things, like you mentioned the case in Ferguson with the Michael Brown. And I see Al Sharpton on the TV, and he's holding rallies, and Jesse Jackson was on there the other day, had his little say about it. All the traditional supposedly black leaders, they are doing the same thing that they've done traditionally for anything that's happened. And that's just, I think that they're sent to try to calm down the crowds and make them behave and things of that nature, just calm them down. They're more like puppets in my book.
This is the same type of stuff that's been going on and on and on and on. But what we need now is we need to begin to cultivate a brand new animal. And this animal has no feelings for the babies, no feelings for the elderly, no feelings whatsoever. It rolls off his back like water off the back of a duck. And when he hones in on his skills and he trains and he masters the art of using the equipment that he has to use, he only has to look at his ancient story and remember who he is and look at what has transpired inside the United States for well over 400 years and over and over and over. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out what you have to do. This is a must. We have to do this immediately. We have to gain our skills and training immediately. You should be able to go to a creek and take a hook and put on a line and throw it in the water and just pull your fish out. We need these skills. And when you have these skills, you can replace fear with skill. And nobody will tell you what you have to do when something your family is hungry and you need food and all of this stuff. So I look over Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, and because I know what they're doing. They do the same thing over and over. There is no results. They keep, and then people keep following them and stuff instead of dealing with them in a certain way. But we haven't done that yet. So they continue to do the same garbage. We had a situation down here in Jacksonville, Florida. And I cannot call the names of the people, but there was a man. He was a Caucasian policeman. And what this man had a habit of doing is coming into the black community and just beating up on people. I mean, just shamefully treating people. So there were a group of men who had had enough. And they called the sheriff's department and told them that there was a domestic disturbance. And in the area where he's accustomed to being. And sure enough, he came to do his thing. Time when they stepped out of the vehicle, as soon as he stepped out of the vehicle, there was a shot from a rifle from a distance, and his head exploded, and it threw him all the way across the hood of the car, and there were brains everywhere. But then there was peace. There was no more problem. There was peace. And so that was a solution to the problem.
Exactly. Wow. Definitely a solution. I guess after that, it did bring peace to the valley.
Yes, there was peace. There was no more problem. But see, we are forgetting, and we are not becoming skilled. We are, instead of going to the grocery store to prepare for Thanksgiving, we should be at the gun range instead of getting toys and stuff in preparation for Christmas Eve. We should be at the gun range instead of going out for Mother's Day and Valentine's Day. We should be at the gun range.
I must agree with that. I'm going to play this clip real quick, and I'm sure this is going to stir the souls and have a lot of comments coming in on this particular clip. So listen to this and then let me know what your opinion is of this.
I was reading an article the other day that stated that there are more black men in prison today than they were slaves in 1850. Now I'm going to roll the clip of Quanell X and Matt Patrick again doing their little debate on Fox here in Houston. I'm going to roll that.
A recent report by the U.S. Sentencing Commission shows that over the last 5 years, African-American men have been getting longer prison sentences than white men. And that same report says men getting longer sentences are getting them longer rather than women. While it does not address why judges hand out the longer sentences, Attorney General Eric Holder said last week the numbers disturb him. Speaking in New York, Holder said it's time to ask fundamental questions about our nation's criminal justice system. So tonight, the Face Off guys address their own question about who should really address this issue of disparity.
Well, Matt, many in this country are angry with the Attorney General Eric Holder for standing up at a convention and telling the truth. He said that there's a problem in America with its criminal justice system when statistics show from the Department of Justice that black men who commit the same crimes as white men get sentenced to prison longer than white men do. But that's not a surprise to any of us. We've always known in this country that racism has been dealt to black men and black people and people of color in the criminal justice system. That's why so many of us protest against it. Angry with it because only those who have the complexion for the protection get the benefit from the criminal justice system.
You know what? Eric Holder should be in jail. And quite frankly, we'll take a couple of those black adults, those black men that you're complaining about, take one or two of them out. Let's put Eric Holder in jail because there's a guy that deserves to be in prison. But how do you know? How do you know if a judge is racist or not? You know what, Quanell, if there is a problem, and I wouldn't disagree with you that it certainly seems as though black adults seem to be spending more time in prison than whites, we've heard that before, then why doesn't somebody do something about it? Eric Holder should be in prison. He's got Russell Simmons, Kim Kardashian, Lil Wayne. You know why nobody pays attention, Quanell? Because those people, no one's going to listen to. They're entertainers.
Matt, whether you like it or not, the facts present the facts, and the truth is, black men are being sentenced to prison much longer than white men for the same crimes and same criminal backgrounds. At the end of the day, that is racism.
Okay,
that's the only thing that's the root of it.
All right. Let's assume you're right. Let's just say you're right. Eric Holder, no one's going to listen to because that guy should be in jail. Kim Kardashian, Lil Wayne, Sharpton, get somebody talking about it that people can believe, Quanell.
No, Matt, see, what you all want is some pacified, sissified, homogenized, overfried Negro leader to say what you all want to say about the subject matter so you all are not threatened. At the end of the day, black leaders should stand up, Hispanic leaders and white leaders who believe in God and the truth.
Let me tell you something.
And tell America this is wrong.
You don't threaten me.
You don't sentence black
men
longer
because
they're strictly
you
black.
At me. You can threaten me all you want.
Threaten you.
It's not going to make me pay attention
you.
To you.
Let me tell you something.
You want to threaten
white men are being sentenced less than black men. Those are the facts. Let's do something about it.
Okay.
That's the bottom line.
Okay. Then get somebody to stand up that I can listen to other than Eric Holder, Kim Kardashian, and Lil Wayne.
We are not going to allow you conservative Tea Party members to tell our community who should speak for our community. At the end of the day, everybody should speak the facts. And the fact is there's racism in the criminal justice system, and black men are being sentenced disproportionately than white men. Something must change that, whether you like it or not.
So you heard Brother Minister Quanell X was really just going ham on dude. And it's the truth. This is the facts. The article that I'm telling you about is in the description box. It was from globalgrind.com. And one number they had in there is that 1 in 9 black parents, we're talking about the parents, 1 in 9 black men are in prison compared to 1 in 57 white men are in prison. Why is that? For the same exact crime. And this is the facts. And Eric Holder brought out the facts, and nobody liked the fact that he talked about this. Why? This has been going on. It's been systematically a way to try to keep black men in some sort of chains. That's why I say the black men don't get caught up in the people prison system, because they want you their slave. Ever since you've been free, they've been trying to figure out a way to break apart your home, just like they did in slavery, and to put you in some sort of chain and bondage, just like they're trying to do with the prison system today. And unfortunately, a lot of you are led to that by your situation, by not having a father around, being looking to drug dealers and gang members as some sort of father figure. And that's a sad thing. I mean, we need to say something about this. How come black men are locked up longer than white men for the same crime? That's not fair. That's not right. Now, Matt Patrick says, well, how do you know a judge is racist? It's very easy. Look at his record. All you got to do is look how many black men he sentenced for a certain thing. Look at how many white men he sentenced for a certain thing, or a Hispanic man for a certain thing. If it's all the same crime, same thing, yet the people of color got more time than the white men had got at that time period, then it may be safe to say that judge is a racist judge. Just like they got racist police, and we talk about racist police, they are racist judges. They will throw black men in jail for years. They pass out that time like they're passing out candy. They don't care. They're not thinking about rehabilitating a black man. They think about how long I can keep him a slave in prison. And you know, prisons are getting privatized, and corporations are making money off of prison labor. They're paying these guys 50 cents, maybe 90 cents a day, all day, to work. Slave labor. But they don't want to pay you at least minimum wage to do the same job. And if they got to do that, they got to ship the jobs over there to China. Black men always experience the worst of everything. Black men can't get hired. Black men get longer jail sentences. Everything black men do is took to the 10th degree. Everything that us as black men go through, nobody goes through in this country. I can care less what you say. It takes a special walk to be a black man in America. Every time you look up, somebody's worrying about what you're doing, worrying about what you're saying. Now, watching that debate and hearing Matt Patrick, there's people in this country that think just like Matt Patrick. And like Cornell X said, you want some sissified, tap-dancing Negro to sit up there and say things you want to say that you don't feel threatened by. What you mean? Why are you threatened for? Nobody's threatening violence. And did you hear say, Cornell, you're threatening me? What did Cornell say to him to threaten him? Cornell didn't say, I'm going to hit you in your face, or I'm going to do whatever. Cornell just was getting hot about him not even acknowledging the facts that black men are in jail longer than white men. He don't even want to acknowledge it. He say, well, let's say maybe. Maybe it's a fact. Every time a black man gets heated or adamant, why a black man got to be all, well, you threatening me, or I'm feeling all, like, really? The man just talking, the man passionate and tired of seeing black men going to jail for long periods of time for the exact same crime. Like my cousin, for instance, he got caught up, never been in jail before. At 17 years old, let me tell you what happened to my cousin. One of his friends asked him, could you help me move? He said, okay, I'll help you. He said, I'll pay you some money. He said, okay, cool. He went with it, but he had went got a gun, didn't know, went to a guy's house, and it's a guy he knew. Now, this is a white man. I'm calling race for a reason. It was a white man, okay? My cousin was standing there. He pointed the gun at the white man and said, you know, give me your money. He said, I ain't got no money. He said, okay, we're going to take you to the ATM. My cousin was standing there. He told my cousin to hold the gun. My cousin held the gun for him to get the money. My cousin pointed the gun at the man. The guy that had the gun didn't even beat the guy. Nothing, okay? He just took some money from him out the ATM and let him go. He gave my cousin $100. That was it. The guy called cops, which he should have. And when I heard about it, that the police were looking for my cousin, and my first thing my grandma said was, man, I think he's in trouble. I said, why? I said, because I heard him and his friend rob a white man. I said, oh, hell no. I said, he gone. I said, you don't rob no white man around here. Oh, he gone. I'm talking back home in Port Arthur. I said, I know better than that. I said, oh, yeah, he gone. He robbed somebody black, he wouldn't be that bad. But somebody, a white man, away all around here, oh, yeah. And sure enough, when my cousin had got caught up, he had $100 on him. He told the cops everything. He went in there. You know how long they locked my cousin up at 17 years old? 20 years. Never had nothing on his record. 20 years. He got locked up in jail. So by the time my cousin would get out of jail, possibly, you know, he'll be almost 40 years old. And that's sad. Now, he's coming up for parole here in a couple of years, thinking the next 3 years he can come up for parole, but if he stay his full sentence, he'll be almost 40. My cousin haven't had a time to even, you know, do something with himself. He wasn't dealing drugs. He wasn't doing anything. You mean you'll give him 20 years and he's never done anything and he didn't even hit the guy? Not one of them hit the guy or roughed him up. The guy who had the gun who initiated the one should have got all the time. Yeah, I'm saying my cousin probably would have got something, but man, 20 years? First time offense? I mean, that's the stuff, you know, like Cornette X is talking about. So we all got family that's been in jail and got some charges, like, really, that much time? You know what I'm saying? And so none of us know who's a racist cop, who's a racist judge. That's the ones that affect you the most, is the cops and the judges. The politicians, yeah, but that's the two. So, brothers, watch yourself on them streets. Don't get involved in no criminal behavior because they want to make you slaves. It's more brothers in jail today than slaves. That's sad. That is sad. You know, and always want somebody to be tap dancing and cooning for everybody. I'm sorry. We don't need to be doing that tap dancing, because that's not getting us nowhere. Now, you're talking about Sharpton. Sharpton ain't helping nobody. I don't care what you say. Jackson ain't helping nobody. It been on the payroll a long time ago. That's why I don't want to hear nothing much Sharpton. When Sharpton took the job at CNN, I say, oh, no, he didn't sold out. You know, and the reason why I said that is because he was on CNN payroll. He got to say what they say he can say. So I couldn't believe he would take that type of job. But he did. And we do need some more people to stand up and say something about our issues. And ones that's not trying to tap dance, you know, for master. But anyway, hit me up in the comments, future commentary, subscribe to the YouTube channel.
Okay. Wow. What a clip. Brother Tahaka, are you there? What do you think about that clip?
Well, I'm in disagreement with the brother on the thing. He seemed to have been excited about the young men robbing a white man and fearful this situation, but there is no need to be fearful. Then he was encouraging brothers and sisters not to do this, not to do that, because somebody after you. I don't understand that type of thinking, and the reason I don't is because I came from a military family, and we do not think that way. I have a friends, and I can't call their name, and it's a pretty large group of us. And all of these men are ex-military. They're all of them professionals. We have, I know SEALs, I know mercenaries, and we've had discussions. And one of the most interesting things that I had a discussion with one of the brothers is he told me that he had a 1-3 rule. And I asked him what was the 1-3 rule. And he was a professional sniper. And he said what he would do was he would, when he seen an enemy, he would fire on that enemy, but he would not kill the enemy. What he would do is he would shoot him in the upper thigh, in his hip, and that would bring him to the ground. And when he would hit the ground, he would lay there. And then other men would rush over to try to get him and pick him up and take him. And he said at that point he would fire 2 to 3 shots in succession, and these were head shots, and he was able to kill 3 men for the price of 1. And we do not have these type of skills in hunting and training because we don't know these type of things. So when the brother is talking about they had robbed the Caucasian in Port Arthur and, oh, no, you got to be fearful and stuff, I don't understand that.
Right. I guess he was. I think he was mostly talking about his cousin or somebody that caught up in the situation. I think he was mostly trying to bring out the fact that that his cousin had got caught up and got sentenced to 20 years for his first offense, and no violence erupted. Like, they didn't beat the guy up or didn't touch him or anything. They just robbed him, and his 17-year-old cousin got 20 years for that. So I think that's what he was mostly trying to focus on. But what I took most from the clip was the first part of it where they had the debate between the brother and the Caucasian man, and how the Caucasian man who's in the House of Representatives never once admitted that what the brother was saying to him was a fact. And the fact was that black men are sentenced to longer terms for the same crime as white men. And do you think that's true?
Exactly. I think it's true. But once again, we're going to have to look at our ancient story. Look at Samson. He's blind, but he planned to deal with his enemies. So he waited until the banquet, and his strength had come back. And when he was sure that the house was full, then he stretched himself between the pillars and brought the whole house down on all of them and kill all of them.
Mm. Wow. That was Samson, huh?
Yes. Go read the story. He did not.
All right.
I don't know if you ever seen the Western, The Outlaw Josie Wales.
Yes.
Clint Eastwood played the outlaw Josie Wales, and he was in this movie, he was what is called a guerrilla fighter. A guerrilla fighter does not go in the opposite direction of the enemy. He goes toward the enemy and brings the fight to the enemy. And this is some things that we haven't understood about our people. Even during World War II, and even with the Buffalo Soldiers, these were guerrilla fighters. And we have always been superior guerrilla fighters, always. You don't wait for something to happen, just like he's talking about the judges and prosecutors and all of these people constantly doing the same thing over and over and over and over. What you have to realize that these people live in your cities and towns. They have residents. They have family members. They have children. They have lives. And they are right there with you. And but we seem to have this thing in our minds where, you know, these people are killing your family members and doing this, that, and the other, and you're sitting back and you don't know what to do. You're full of this fear and all of this stuff. I had a policeman once that came after me, and I had a weapon that I had tossed in the grass. And the police went over, and he got the weapon because I told him where it was. And when he got the weapon, now the weapon belongs to me. And I looked in the police report. There was no mention of the weapon. So, in other words, this man had took something from me. So I went to the jail looking for him on three different occasions. And on three different occasions, they tell me that they don't know where he is. And I said, well, is there any way that you can have him call me so that I can establish a meeting so I can tell him to give me my weapon back? And I've searched the city inside out with teams of men, and I don't know where he is. I will not stop searching until I get my weapon back from him. You're a man. You're man to man. You don't go in the opposite direction. You go toward, and you take it there. When you're hunting and fishing and trapping and trying to prepare for yourself and developing the skills, because once you develop the skills, you have no fear. There is no fear.
Well, all right, Brother Tahaka. Then I think fear is something that I guess is brought down from our years of dealing with them and years of mental slavery and things of that nature, and we do have a fear of them. Even when I speak of this subject with my young sons and stuff, they say, there ain't no way, and I give them some ideas on how to handle different situations. They say, ain't no way you'll be able to do that. You can't go against, can't go up against the police. You can't go up against the court systems. I'm going, okay. You can't, then that's the fear in you that's thinking that, doing that, and as long as that fear is possessing you, you will never be able to go up against that.
Well, the reason why people think that way is because they don't know anything about the greatness and magnificence of who they are. They don't know. I mean, if you descended from kings and queens, and that's obvious, the ancient story is there, then you should act like it. You should always have a full knowledge of yourself, and then you combine that with training, and then you look at the people on the planet. You look at the ancient story and behavioral patterns, and that will tell you exactly what to do anytime you are violated, anytime your family member has been injured or harmed. There was if you look and remember in the movie The Godfather, there was a man called the Turk, and the Turk wanted to have a meeting with Marlon Brando, the Godfather. And they was about to do what's called a shakedown. In other words, I need you to go along with this plan so we can take over some of your market. And Marlon Brando was sitting there. He was listening to the man. He was playing by the rules of the game. Listen to what the man has to say. Never threaten a man and never let a man know what you're thinking. Those are the rules. But Khan was his son, and when the Turk began to explain to Marlon Brando what they wanted and what the intentions was, James Khan jumped in. He began to shout, and my daddy is son, and who do you think you are? You can't do this. And Marlon Brando immediately jumped in. He said, hold on, sir, I'm sorry. I have to apologize to you for my son's behavior. And the reason he did that, because his son was breaking the rules. He was letting the man know how he felt about it, how he think about it, and what he's prepared to do about it. You don't ever do that. The only thing that you need to know is who did it and where he at. That's it. That's all.
Mm.
Then go to work, man. All this marching and jumping and shouting and hooping, toting signs and Jesse Jackson and all this thing. Get it out of the way. Move the television cameras out the way. You don't need to see this him. This is real. And we're going to have to learn how to think this way and how to act this way. It don't take a rocket scientist to figure this out. These people have been doing this to you for over 400 years. What are you going to do about it?
Exactly.
That is how I feel about it.
Okay. All right, sir. Well, we're going to take a quick break. I'm going to play a couple of commercials, and then I want to play another clip that I have on the prison statistics and things of that nature. Okay, bruh?
Okay, sir.
Removing the burdens of debt gives us a freedom unmatched. Peace of mind is something that's very vital to our health. Not only do we want to concentrate on growing our own food and contributing to nutrition, but we also want to free our mind from the burden of stress. Stress is a killer. Go to www.newdebtelimination.com. Look at the items we have there. Before making any selections, you can give me a call. If you have problems with your student loan, if you got a situation with the Internal Revenue Service, mortgage, or whatever it is, go to newdebtelimination.com. Contact me, Tahaka Moniel Bay, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Remove the burden of debt. Okay, everybody, Tahaka Archives Master Library is up and running again. For those of you who have gotten a hold of Tahaka's Archive Master Library, go ahead and either give me a call or forward me your donation ticket back to Tahaka53@hotmail.com, and we'll get that thing to you. Also, for those of you who have not accessed this powerful library, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's www.newdebtelimination.com. Click on the donation page up top and you'll see a complete listing of the packages and stuff that we offer. And of course, Talk Archive Master Library is now officially listed and we're back up and running. Okay? Peace.
It's no surprise that the United States incarcerates more people than any other country in the world. But if you look at the newest statistics, I think some of the findings are pretty jarring. In fact, we have 6.9 million people in the United States that are either in prison, on parole, or on probation. So let me give you the exact numbers. The number of people in prison or parole or on probation, that's 6.9 million Americans, exceeds the populations of the second and third largest cities. That's Los Angeles and Chicago combined, or the size of the next four, Houston, Philadelphia, Phoenix, and San Antonio put together. Now, there are a number of different reasons why this is the case. There's the emergence of private prisons. Of course, we lock away nonviolent drug offenders. We also now detain and imprison undocumented immigrants before we deport them. So there's this ridiculous argument about how, oh, they're using up our resources, but then why do we imprison them for years to come and then deport them? We do it so for-profit prisons can make money off of it. And so we have all these nonviolent people behind bars, and all of our tax dollars, or a majority of our tax dollars, majority is not right, but a significant amount of our tax dollars go toward incarcerating them. So 38 U.S. states are home to fewer people than live under the correction system in this country.
So there's meaning 38 states have fewer than 7 million people. I mean, it's just, those numbers are staggering. It's like we have 52 states now,
yeah.
You know, and two of them are just a bunch of guys in prison or, again, on probation or parole. It's so dumb. It's so and like what the drug war was the impetus. The privatization of prisons plays a role now. I'm totally curious as to the percentages that are ultimately that are in private prisons, because they obviously have a much bigger incentive than the state. I mean, the state, you would think, has an incentive to get the people out,
right,
and to have them not come back. But we're still at the point where what is the numbers? How quickly the recidivism rate? I can't
believe the recidivism rate is.
We both said it right. That's so great.
Yeah, it is. We're professional. The recidivism rate is really high in the United States. I mean, you have some states like California where the recidivism rate is about 60%.
Now you're just showing off.
Sorry. But yeah, 60% in California alone. And I think that the average in the United States is around 50%. So there's really an incentive for these for-profit prisons to have a high recidivism rate because they want to ensure that they have a steady flow of inmates. And by the way, I mean, some people would argue, hey, that's private enterprise, but it's not really private because public money gets funneled into these private prisons. And the whole argument is that the private prisons help save money. But there have been numerous studies done that show that that's not the case because they get to cherry pick the type of inmates they bring in. And usually they have these contracts that have that has like a clause, and it's a minimum occupancy clause, right? And it says 90% of our beds need to be full, and if they're not, the state still has to pay for the empty beds.
Those numbers are just, it's so dumb. It's so, and the problem with the private, I'm sure that's all, well, that's all true, and there's nothing good about a private prison. Nothing good about a private prison.
Mm-hmm.
But the notion that, like, once a state writes a check to the private prison company, they kind of wash their hands of it. You would think states that are literally seeing the expense that they have to pay for every prison, for every inmate, would be interested in reducing those and getting the guys who aren't a danger to society out of jail, and then engage as a state, and then engaging in a process that trains them, gives them the proper job training, so we dramatically reduce the odds that we're going to see them again, because it benefits all of us if we go out and they work.
Yeah, and it all really goes back to how we lost our priorities when it comes to our justice system, because, you know, of course there's the element of punishment, but then there's supposed to be that element of rehabilitation, but we've completely abandoned that notion. Now we focus primarily on keeping them in a cell, in a lot of cases abusing these people to the point where they do become hardened criminals after they've been incarcerated for a nonviolent crime. Now if you break it down by race, the numbers are even more shocking and jarring. So 1 in 35 are under some form of correctional supervision, and that's all people in general. But if you look at race, likelihood to spend time in prison in the U.S., 1 out of 3 black males in this country are likely to spend time behind bars. And when it comes to Hispanics, it's 1 out of 6. When it comes to white males, it's 1 out of 25.
We win again. Nailed it. 1 in 3.
Yeah.
1 in 3.
If you're black, you're very likely to end up behind bars.
Yeah. And then, you know, and there are people around the country who've had innovative ways to sort of fix this problem, and we just tend not to look at them. And, you know, and for a long time, politically, the good news is that it's significant news, I think, is that politically, this is no longer a crazy thing to talk about. Because in my lifetime, in the 80s and much of the 90s, if you talked about, man, we got to let some of these guys out of prison. Mm-hmm. Like, this is crazy. You would have been seen as soft on crime and willing to pose a threat to innocent, young, virginal white women and children across this country. That's what that conversation meant, even if you, like, never brought race into it. But you'd be like, we should probably open the doors to some prisons and let guys who aren't a danger out. Because the theory was, if you're in prison, you're dangerous,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And the drugs are dangerous, and that eliminated the fact that you know, and marijuana, all of them are just as dangerous as the other. And then now we can at least have a normal, we're close to being able to have a normal conversation. And I'm just guessing that six of those 6.9 million Americans, I don't know exactly what the number is, but, you know, half of them are non, like, nobody's arguing.
There's a huge chunk of people in prison right now that are nonviolent. It's because of drug offenses. Look, I think prison should be, you know, reserved for people who have murdered, who have assaulted, who have robbed, any type of violent crime. I mean, that's the whole point of prison. You want to keep people that are a threat to society out of society until they're rehabilitated.
And not just violent threat, but like the non-violent threat. I mean, you know, the Bernie Madoff threats of the world and Wall Street bankers and thugs. But I mean, guys who steal, if you take something that doesn't belong to you, right? But using drugs for yourself or your friends, come on, what are we talking about?
Yeah, if there's a victimless crime, that person shouldn't be sent to prison. That person should be rehabilitated. It's that simple. I don't want prostitutes behind bars. I don't want drug users behind bars. I honestly don't want undocumented immigrants behind bars, because that goes against the entire argument that they're using up our resources. Why are we going to spend tax dollars to keep them in prison for a few years before deporting them? It doesn't make any sense. And that we didn't really do that until for-profit prisons started working with ALEC to lobby government to make sure that we detain them for as long as we can before we deport them. So it's all about profiteering. It's all about money. It's not about rehabilitating people. And that's why our justice system right now is so screwed up.
All right, then. I want everyone out there listening to keep in mind, if you have a question or a comment, you can dial the number 310-982-4184. Go ahead and press 1 on your phone, and that will signal to me that you have a comment to share with us, and I'll go ahead and open up your mic, and you can get on and let us hear. But okay, Brother Tahaka, what's your views on that latest clip?
Well, I was listening to the clip. You have to understand that I am not a TV watcher, and I do not allow my brain to be filled with this type of rhetoric and, you know, statistics and all of that. I already know what's going on inside the United States. Who is happening to, and who doing it, and why they're doing it. And so to me, I think our time can be best spent in preparation for the solution to the problem, because I know what works and I know what don't work. I have seen it over and over and over again. I've never seen a bully a man, and that man turn around and get that bully, and the bully come back with some more bullies. No, that is the end of the bully. You know, he may go and do something with somebody else, but you know, when it comes to you, it's a whole different ball game, because you're a different breed of animal. And I think we'll feel better if we go to the foundation and realize who we are. And when you realize who you are and who you have been in the ancient past, and look at the circumstances that we are facing as a nation of people in the United States, we don't need an autopsy. We don't need a grand jury. We don't need a court. We don't need a judge. We don't need none of that. All we need is the solution. And that can be handled very quickly at less expense to the taxpayer and all of that, because I've seen it over and over and over and been faced with it over and over and over during my lifetime. And the results have always been the same, always.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you, Brother Tahaka, for that. And we have another caller with the hand raised, and I'm going to bring them in. Area code 704, tell us who you are, what's your question or comment?
Islam Otep, peace. This is Byron Bay. I'm out of Fatima, Charlotte, North Carolina. I have an issue that's dealing with my my daughter. She had issue with her first ticket. She on January 1st, New Year's Day, she got a ticket for Open Container. And she's they told her she had to go to some kind of a substance abuse program and pay for this program and go for like 6 weeks or something. Well, yesterday, her court day is to today. it's her first time having any ticket. I'm pretty sure what's going to happen is we're going to have her ask for a continuance. Yes, ma'am. So we're asking for a continuance. And tell her that I told her that she go to court and ask just for continuance, and that her counsel is a religious holy day. It is a holy day for her counselor, which you know today is a holy day for all Muslims. Get that continued as for at least 60 days, and not on a Friday, and. I'm pretty sure that's going to work. I'm certain I'm going to go with her, you know. But I had child support that was taken out on her, which is now it's all that's gone. She's 21. At the time, she was 20. And her status is a minor because she has not declared a nationality. So when I was studying to take care of the child support case. I understood that, or I comprehended that they were charging me with taking care of the state's property and placing the responsibility on me. So I'm thinking now that I may be able to go into court under the grounds that my child is a minor, okay, and, you know, you had me having been responsible for this child, and she's not able to contract, you know, she has no nationality, not really go into all that, but, you know, she's a minor, and I'm thinking that this is an argument that I can work. I got to do some research, because like I said, just finding out today, or really last night, that what was going on. What would you suggest that I, you know, the action that I could take? Because, like I say, a few months ago, I tried to get her to study up on some things, and, you know, that kind of fell through. Now she's a little studying now, but I'm trying to figure out what would be the best course of action, and that's the end of my question.
Okay, well, answer that question there for you, Chris, if you don't mind.
Yes.
What I would recommend you to do is call me after this broadcast over at 904-303-9061 after this broadcast is over.
All right. Well, I will. Pen's not working. Let me write that down. Okay. Got another pen.
That's 303-904.
303-9061. 9061. Okay. All right. Thank you, Brother
Tahaka. Thank you. All right. You're welcome, brother.
All right. Thank you. All right. Peace. I don't know how to take it out of the, take my voice out of the queue. Do I have to push a button?
No, we do that on this end. There you go. You out. So, Sharon?
Okay. Yes. So, brother has some interesting things to say about when his daughter then caught a little mild case and he needed some help on how to get through that. I know he was mentioning things where he was going to try to see if he can have her send it, brought up in court as a minor, but she's 21 years old, so I'm not sure about how that's going to work out. But, I'm sure you'll be able to give him some solutions to his dilemma.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But back to this prison thing. we have established that this is a big money-making business and that it's also a new form of slavery. I think there should be no doubt in anyone's mind out there now that that's exactly what this is. And the only way to arm yourself with this is going to have to go back to knowledge again. Again, like I said, it's going to focus on you having a good knowledge of yourself and your history. And that's going to be what's going to be your saving grace, I think.
Well, not only having knowledge of self, but you're going to have to go to the second phase. And the second phase is replacement of fear. And you do that by skill. You learn how to use certain techniques. You learn how to survive. You learn how to hunt. You learn how to fish. You learn how to trap. You learn how to track an animal through the bush. You learn what vegetation is on the land that you can use for food, what you can use for medicine, and you learn how to fire all manner of weapons and to make ammunition for these weapons. And when you have these skills, there is absolutely no room for fear. And then you go to the third part and you begin to look at the nature of the peoples on the earth and look at their historical record, and that will tell you what you have to do. Period. It's just that simple. It's 1, 2, 3. Knowledge of self, skill and preparation, investigation.
Okay. Simple as 1, 2, 3, huh?
Okay. And to give you a case in point, is I had a young man who wanted to attack me for no reason in the world. And when he did, there were no arguments, there were no loud talking stuff. We listened to everything he had to say. And then he began to rip and rave about threats and all of this stuff here. But once again, there was nothing said. We encouraged him to say more. And after he said everything that he had to say, then we simply went away. And but I found out where he was, and I went into the area where he was because he said that he was going to get me, and he can't get me if I'm not available. So I made myself available so that he could get me. And all of his friends told him, there he is right there. He's standing right there. You can get him. But he was faced with reality. And he decided, well, something is not right. This is not wrong. I don't think I need to go over there and get him. But anyway, we have to change our thinking and prepare and be prepared to do what we have to do by any means necessary.
Definitely. Well, I want to just remind, I see we got maybe a new call on the line. I would like to remind you that if you'd like to have a question or a comment, you can dial in at 310-982-4184. Go ahead and press 1 on your phone. That will open up your phone line. I'll give you the mic and you can have your say. Right now, I would like to play for you another little short clip I found on judges taking kickbacks for the prison system. Listen at this.
Well, with over 2 million people in jail, the U.S. has the world's biggest prison population. But some are seeing the inside of a cell because dodgy judges are getting payback from the private sector. RT's Gane Chichikan reports on those dishing out justice for a fee.
Two Pennsylvania judges have made a killing out of juvenile prisons. Mark Chivarella and Michael Conahan were convicted of receiving kickbacks for more than $2 million from the developers of several private detention centers. But the real crime, according to parents, is that these judges then sent more than 5,000 children to those very facilities for crimes as small as fighting on a school bus or posting a parody of their teacher on the web.
My kid's not here. He's dead because of him. He ruined my life. Do you remember me? Do you remember my son? An all-star wrestler? He's gone. He's not in some of the heart.
Sandy Fonzo's 17-year-old son, Edward, was a budding student and sportsman when he was arrested at an underage party. Judge Chivarella locked him up for 6 months. Shortly after he got out, Edward committed suicide.
He never looked into, you know, the whole picture of the kids. Like I said, he lined them up one by one and he sent them away, shackled them, sent them to places that, you know, God knows what went on, and then he throws them back. And how does a kid deal with that? You know, my son just never recovered from it.
Eric Stefanski was 12 when Judge Chivarella sent him to jail for 2 years for scratching his mom's car while joyriding. Or this young man, who as a teenager was locked up for months for throwing a piece of steak at his mom's boyfriend.
I really couldn't believe that being accused of something like throwing a steak was all that was needed to be put away.
The case of the two Pennsylvania judges in bed with local private prisons could be just the tip of the iceberg. A recent report revealed America's largest prison corporations pour hundreds of thousands into the campaigns of governors, state legislators, and judges in the hope of advancing their agenda. And it seems to be working. The number of private prisons in the U.S. is growing rapidly.
All of their money, every penny they get, is a taxpayer dollar that they get from the government. And so what they do is they get the money from the government to house prisoners. Then they turn around and spend some of that money by giving it back to the politicians that push the laws and the policies that lead to both more people being incarcerated and more people being incarcerated in private prisons. So it's almost a money laundering of tax dollars.
They're making contributions to judges in electoral politics. It's sort of like a closed circuit. You're making contributions to people who are making the laws, and then you're making contributions to people who are enforcing the laws.
With the number of prisons, up goes the number of prisoners. The U.S. has around 2.3 million people behind bars.
We've seen prison populations pretty consistently over the last three decades move up a couple percent a year. And, unfortunately, as a citizen, that's not the most exciting statistic. However, when you look at it from a business model perspective for the private operators, it's clearly good news.
The good news for the prison business turned into a nightmare for thousands of underage victims of the two judges in Pennsylvania.
There's an incentive in private industry, obviously, to make money. That's what private industry is for. So there's an incentive to have more prisoners, an incentive to keep those prisoners incarcerated for longer periods of time. There's really no incentive for rehabilitation. The incentives are reversed.
The so-called Cash for Kids case in Pennsylvania showed just how reversed the incentives can be and raise the question, with judges actually interested in sending people away for longer terms and keeping their benefactors' private prisons full, what justice can one count on? I'm Ganesh Chakyam reporting from Washington, RT.
All right. Okay. So we got some judges in Pennsylvania taking kickbacks, just locking kids up into those little boot camps and all type of things that they sentence to. They even have little, I call them baby prisoners, but they're, I know I had the opportunity at one time, I was in Jacksonville, Florida, and I was teaching at this place called Hastings Youth Academy. That was the name of it, but it wasn't an academy. It wasn't a school. It was actually a prison in the state of Florida where they sent all the juveniles in the whole state to that was had got in trouble with the law. And that's what they, and that particular operation was totally run by this corporation called G4S Security. And they're the ones who bought the contract, and I found out then that they actually bid it on the contract through the state of Florida, and they won that contract too, so that they were out there and they hired all of us in as teachers and stuff and to teach the kids that were out there. And the population out there was like 95% was black and maybe about 3 or 4% was Hispanic, and maybe 1% of them out there was white and things of that nature. But that was a privately corporation that was funding the juvenile system there in Florida. So it does exist. I'd just like to give you guys just a little bit more statistics on this prison industry thing and the corporations that actually are running the prison industry. The biggest corporation out there that's doing this is called CCA, and they're called the Corrections Corporation of America. They have 66 facilities owned by the Corrections Corporation of America, which makes them the largest private prison company based on facilities. They have 91,000 beds available across 20 states and the District of Columbia. They made $1.7 billion in revenue recorded down in 2011. They have $17.4 million to use towards lobbying expenditures in the last 10 years. They have $1.9 million total that they've contributed to political contributions. The next biggest group is called the Geno Group Incorporated. It's the second largest private detention company. They boasted of $1.6 billion in revenue, in 2011. They have 65 correctional facilities. They have 65,716 beds available. They also supply $2.5 billion to their lobbying expenditures. They support the politicians with $2.9 billion also. So they're the second largest company out there that's a corporation in the system. So it's CCA, and then it is also the Geno Group. Those are the two biggest ones. But there are others, but those are the two largest ones. So, Brother Tahaka, have you ever heard of either one of these corporations before?
Yeah, a couple of them I have, but I don't entertain them because I'm in the position that I am. I have to look at my nation holistically. I have to look at the entire nation, the entire so-called black populace, both male and female. And I have to deal with that on that scale. And so I'm not big on looking at the statistics of what's going on because I look at the underlying factor. And we have to realize that nothing has changed since we've been on this landmass and since immigrants of all kinds have been on this landmass. Nothing has changed. It's been the same thing. Since we're here, we seem to be under the impression that things were different, but it wasn't. We were enslaved. After that, we were enslaved, and then after that, we were enslaved. And today, we are enslaved, and tomorrow, we will be enslaved until you exercise the only solution. There is but one solution. There's but one. There's not two. There's but one. All of this looking for something different and thinking about some hook or crook or religion, Jesus, or something like that, none of that is going to work. You do have a spiritual side, and there's power there. But you're going to have to devil by the hand.
Wow.
When you take him by the hand, the only thing left is somebody going to cut somebody's throat. That's the bottom line. When you hold hands with the devil, your throat cut, your boat can capsize in the Atlantic Ocean. You can be in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, and your boat can capsize. Sharks could come around. You can splash and holler and scream all you want. Sometimes he'll go away. And I'm not going to lie to you. Sometimes he'll go away. But sometimes he won't go away.
That's exactly true, brother. And what I like to do, we'll take a quick break right here, and I have just one more clip that I would like to get out there to you. It's a really short clip, but we'll take a quick break, and then we'll come back to wrap up the program, okay?
Okay, so.
If I kiss, if I held you tight in the morning light, yeah. Would you mind if I said how I felt in the leave tonight?
We're back. All right. As I said, I have one little small clip that I have to play, and I'm going to play that now, and then we'll come back and wrap up. Okay?
There is an industry here in America that wants to lock you up for as long as it can. The more people it can warehouse in cages, the more money it makes. And which private prison company made $1.7 billion last year alone?
CCA, or Corrections Corporation of America, is the largest for-profit prison operator in the United States and currently has around 90,000 privatized prison beds in around 20 states. They get paid per day, per inmate at their facility. What this does is it provides an incentive for them to maximize the number of people incarcerated in their for-profit prisons. It's like the hotel industry. The hotel industry wants to keep their beds full as much as possible because it means more revenue. Same thing for the private prison companies.
About half the people in American prisons are in for nonviolent offenses, and we have more people in prison than any country in the world.
CCA has a vested interest in mass incarceration because that's how it generates its revenue. It's how it makes money for its shareholders and corporate executives.
Now that states across the country have budget problems, CCA is masquerading as the solution by offering to buy all their prisons.
CCA and other private prison companies say that they can save money because they know that's what politicians and policymakers want to hear. Some studies, including the 2010 Arizona State Auditor Report, found that private prisons actually cost more than public prisons once all the corresponding factors are considered.
Even worse, CCA's proposed contract with 48 states would guarantee a 90% occupancy rate for 20 years. How could a state guarantee that? By making sure harsh laws are passed.
CCA has spent nearly $19 million lobbying federal officials on a host of issues.
It has put millions more into state and federal elections, and it works with ALEC, a group that pushes pro-corporate legislation. ALEC wrote more than 85 bills to promote prison privatization and increase sentences. One of these bills was Arizona's controversial SB 1070.
The law allowing police to stop someone for looking Hispanic and detaining them if they weren't carrying proper papers.
This law was almost word for word as ALEC wrote it. And you thought that was all about keeping immigrants out. Nope. It's about locking immigrants up.
This is a moral and ethical issue that we should not be locking people up so that companies can generate profit.
Fight the prison profiteers. Tell Congress, no handouts for private prisons at prisonprofiteers.org. Click here.
Okay, well, we're back, and that's just a little more information on CCA and the corporations, the big corporations that's running the prison industry. It's a guy by the name of Henry Wendell. He is the owner of CCA. He is the individual who invested the most in private prisoners, and he started serving on CCA's board of directors in 2000 when the company was struggling with scandals related to prisoner abuse and mismanagement. He now owns more than 650,000 shares in the company, which is far more successful these days. Those shares are worth more than $25 million. And when asked by a reporter about how he made his fortune, he commented that America is the freest country in the world. America allows more freedom than any other country in the world, much more than Russia and a whole lot more than Scandinavia, where they really aren't free. So offering all this freedom to society, there will be a certain number of people more in this country than elsewhere who take advantage of that freedom, abuse it, and end up in prison. That happens because we are so free in this country. That's what Henry Wendell said. But he didn't comment on the $25 million that he have made off the prisoners himself. So, Mr. Wendell, I don't know what to say about that gentleman. Brother Tahaka, you got any last comments or anything for us here?
Yeah, sister, the first thing I want to bring out is tomorrow night,
We'll be doing a broadcast. My special guest will be a gentleman named Larry Williams. We'll be dealing with owning your own business and networking. And then Sunday night we will come back with the administrative process on the private side and in public. We'll be doing these two broadcasts. But then now I want to address your statements. You use the word called freedom. And this is what we have to understand about freedom. First of all, you were born a free moral agent. All governments around the world have copycat someone who has taken control. And people who have the most so-called resources. This is so-called resources. We do not understand that our basic resources are within us. The greatest power lies within us as the masses, within our the confines of our hands. We have a very powerful tool. It is called the brain. And when we get a hold of it and we take it and use it, then we can do magnificent things and wonders. However, when you talk about freedom in the world, anywhere, there are places on this planet that people and little spots and nooks and crannies where people actually live free. But if you do not have control of the entire apparatus, you cannot really fathom the totalness of what it means to be free. We are inside the United States. We've been labeled as the freest people on the planet. But I'm sorry to disappoint you. That is simply not true. There is nothing like freedom, real freedom. But we have to understand that along with our freedom comes responsibility. I don't need anybody to tell me that I need to keep my body clean. I don't need anybody to tell me that I need to keep my house clean. I don't need anybody to tell me that I need to love myself and embrace my kind first, doing anything else with anybody else. I don't need anybody to tell me that. I've taken on the responsibility to do that. So when we look at the definitions of the terminology that we so loosely display and so usually say all the time, then we can get down to the business of taking these components and actually fixing them where we can use them. But you cannot use them properly if you are burdened with fear, if you have loaned your brain out to the control of somebody else. If you're constantly watching TV, you're in a bad fix because you're automatically being programmed. So you got to take control of that. You can get books and stuff, and I recommend the oldest books. A lot of books and stuff are not in print, but you can get them from my antique bookstores, and you can study, and you can formulate and create your own self, your own thinking. But you must take responsibility for your freedom. And if you are free, then you should act responsibly. Now, if you have somebody that somebody that have a problem with your freedom because they feel that they're in control, I think you should listen to them. If a man is threatening you, I think you should listen to him. I don't think there should be an argument. You should acquire all the necessary information that you need to make a decision, but be prepared to carry it out. There should never be an argument or a debate about anything. You know, make a decision and carry it out. Now, as far as these statistics and stuff, and I think you've had a wonderful broadcast tonight, and you have brought some things to the table that we have to consider. But more importantly, I think that the information that you and I and the callers and stuff are bringing out here, I think that needs has equal importance, and we need to consider that. This is not a game. This is for your life. If you are free, why would somebody ride upside you and tell you to get out of the street if you were free? You have to understand that we have people who have taken upon themselves to have some type of authority. But you don't argue with these people. You gather information and you go to work and be prepared to do what you got to do. It's not personal. It's not racist. It's business, because this ain't no game. So when you do what you have to do, then you can, me personally, in the beginning I had a little problem with thinking about what I'd done and, you know, all the rest. And eventually I got over it to the point where I do what I have to do. It's not personal. It's not racist. It's just business. I had no choice. You had every opportunity to do the right thing. You didn't do it. And so, therefore, I'm able to enjoy the evening. I relax. I can, if I want to, I can listen to the radio. I can read a book. Or if I want to get outside and do a little cooking, if I want to go out and enjoy the evening, go someplace, it's fine. You know, enjoy yourself. If you're free, you're supposed to be. If you are free, then you're supposed to enjoy your life. You cannot enjoy full freedom with restriction of somebody that's interfering with your freedom. The problem is, and the solution to, is what are you going to do about it? Are you prepared to do what you have to do at any given time? All the hooping, right, and hollering and protesting and sign toting and soapbox standing and we going down to the courthouse to protest. No, don't do that. What are you doing? Who done it? Where yet? Hang up the phone.
Who done it and where they at? That's all you need to know, huh?
That's all. That's all you need to know. You don't. I can't understand why would you allow a man to kill your child, and then you turn around and let that man in his time tell you anything about, we're going to look into the matter. You ain't going to have time. You ain't got time. You killed my child. I love my child. We're not looking at right or wrong. We ain't looking at none of this. I just want to know who done it and where you at. You killed my child. Nobody didn't kill yours. My child is dead. Your child is still running around. You know, you going to bar mitzvahs, you going to weddings, you're running for office, you're enjoying life, and I'm sitting over here miserable. This has nothing to do with racism. We shouldn't even have a conversation about whether it's racist or not. Period. Who done it? Where is it? Yeah. I don't know nothing else. That's the only thing I ever done, man. Now, I got to admit now, when I was growing up, I had brothers. And my brothers, sometimes they'd come to me and tell me, so-and-so hit me. My first question was, why? What did you do to him? I didn't do nothing to him. So now I got to launch an investigation. I got to go ask everybody around in the area what happened. And they said, well, no, your brother, he didn't do nothing. That boy didn't ever like him. He done this, that, and the other. So what I do is I go get the enemy, and I put him in a ring with my brother. I said, all right, son, go for what you know. And it wasn't going to be no, if my brother knock him down, I ain't going to let him get on top of him and beat him up. I'm going to put him out of the way and let him back up. Y'all go again. As we got a good man-to-man contest that was the end of that.
Yeah. I remember those days back in the day when I was growing up. I always tell my sons the story of how we didn't fight with, if we had a disagreement with somebody, we fought with our fists and stuff. But nowadays people want to shoot and to settle disagreements. And you can't, once you take a life, you can't never do nothing else about that. That's just over and done with. But if you're fighting with your fists, you can live to fight another day. Because very seldom you're going to get just beat to death, so. You can get shot to death immediately.
Yeah, you got that kind of stuff going on. We have to adjust to this type of system. This is all we ever knew. Yeah, I ain't know nothing about it. You pull out a knife back in the day, and the women find out you pulled out a knife, you was just the lowest thing on the planet. But now we have weakness on the earth. We have allowed weakness to get in the way of real men and women. And now it is acceptable for you to be a victim. Now keep in mind now, everything talks about being a victim and every the way we should look at it. But the thing is, what you got to look at it this way. Okay, you're of African descent. If you're of African descent, you have always been on this landmass. The oldest artifacts on the planet and on the North American continent belongs to you. They're yours. Okay, so you, anything else outside of that that don't look like you, we have to look at. We have to investigate. We have to look at the timeline and all this. So if we got immigrants in the country that said, well, we need to have guns and stuff and all the right here. Man, I look at that situation as being a cowardice position. But if we are in this type of situation, we got to survive this thing. We didn't have no guns and none of it. We just, two men came together. They had a fight. As it was over with, we go back and communicate with one another. It wasn't no thing where, I'm going to go by, do a drive-by. And you're kidding, oh, man, what is this? I don't understand this kind of behavior. But we have weakness on the planet, so therefore we're going to have to deal with it. We're going to have to be prepared for it. But my position is when you do what you have to do, should be no second thought. If you run off your back like water off the back of a duck, and you go on and don't lose no days. Because if we have to do this at 5 o'clock in the morning and it lasts 15 minutes, the rest of the day is still available to you. You need to enjoy yourself. And there shouldn't be a second thought about it, or whatever you have to do. I don't know. Sometimes we get things that last 5 minutes. As it was over with, we enjoy the rest of the day. No matter who it was, who they thought they in their mind that they was, or who somebody told them that they was, how much training they had, it didn't matter. None of that mattered. So we're going to have to change our thinking behavior. And I'm surprised at brothers, and I'm appalled at brothers, because they're walking around talking about, I got balls. Really?
Mm-hmm.
My question is for you to show me what you're working with.
Hmm. Action speaks louder than words, huh?
Yeah. We don't have to get excited about anything.
Hmm. It almost seems as though you think is the weakest person that's the one that's doing all the hollering and shouting on the branch anyway. What you got to scream so loud for to be heard? Maybe you're not saying nothing worth listening to. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, yeah, that's correct. We have people hollering about white power. Then we have people hollering about black power. What if you really had the power, what are you telling anybody about? It appears to me that we got two scared people facing each other. Anytime I've ever find myself aligned with a scared man, the first thing to do is to get rid of him, because a coward would get you killed. I found that out.
You had to get away, get rid of that, because the dirt that I came out of, I don't even think that dirt exists on the earth no more. And but we didn't do no stuff like that, you know. Where the hell at? Where's the door so I can go in?
Well, that is so true, but times have changed, but we got to be able to change with the times, just like you said, and we're going to have to be able to protect ourselves and take a total new direction towards this whole thing of brutality against our things of that nature, because what we have been doing, we've been doing for years, and it has not worked because it's still going on, so... It should be a time for a change. People got to open up your eyes and see that what you're doing is not working. It's time to try something different.
There's only one way, and when we embrace the solution, be prepared to carry out the solution. And until then, the same thing will keep happening, because the guy up in Ferguson, a couple of days later, they shot another one. So when it comes, you know what you go, man. What common sense ought to tell you? There's only one solution, and that's the solution that I've used all my life successfully. It got the same result successfully, you know.
Well, brother,
I had men come to me in high school. They jumped on my brother, and they found out that he was my brother. It appeared that the entire school had one thing in their mind. I didn't know that it was a brother. They coming to me apologizing. Man, I swear to God, I didn't know. Man, God, Jesus, God Almighty, please, God help us. We didn't know that. We told you. Jesus, God, help me. Lord, have mercy. I'm going to pray about it. Anyway, praying soon.
That is something else right there. Well, Brother Tahaka, we're coming down to the close of the show. I just want to thank you for all of your comments today and being on the show.
Well, I thank you, Susa, for the wonderful broadcast that you have, and I look forward to many more.
Thank everybody out there who was listening to the show. Feel free to check in on Facebook and Facebook is Sharon Hunter. You can Google me there. Friend request me, and I'll add it back, and you can keep up to date on any future shows that'll be on. And until next time, peace and love.
Peace and love.
Thank you. first thing in the morning. Yeah, yeah. When I open my eyes and see you, yeah, yeah, yeah. I feel like a breath of fresh air. I feel like I could fly, and I could get by.
You know that I love you, baby.
Any obstacle that comes my way,
you know I do anything for you.
Thank you.